Say it. Say it.
The Boogie Monster with Kyle Kinane and Dave Stone.
Mean it. Say it again.
The Boogie Monster with Kyle Kinane and Dave Stone.
Well, not sexy, like real.
The Boogie Monster with Kyle Kinane and Dave Stone.
Nailed it.
Doing it. I just don't. I'm doing it.
You don't care.
I got a real bad attitude today, man.
Why you got a bad attitude?
Because my fucking toe hurts.
Oh, man. That's a funny, not to make light of your ailment, but that is a funny reason to have a bad attitude. My toe hurts. Fuck
man,
you.
Man, I mean, you find out about people that live in constant pain. I've just only been in pain for a week, and
yeah.
I'm like, fuck this shit.
What exactly kind of pain is it? Like, when you say your toe hurts, is it like the bone? Is it?
I've never broken a bone, but this, I assume this is what it feels like when you break your foot.
Hmm.
Mildly, but. You know, I thought I was getting better, and now it's like, can't really, like, I was walking on it, I was even dancing, I was at a wedding, I was even shuffling around a little bit on the dance floor, and thinking like, oh, cool, it's getting better, and now it's worse.
Is it the whole toe, or is it like the tip, or the base?
Right where the big toe kind of meets the foot, the
okay.
whole joint.
Ugh.
Gout is, it's whatever uric acid crystallizes and forms, it forms crystals in where your joint should be.
Yeah.
You know, where your bones should move smoothly. Instead, as Rachel's grandfather, who was a doctor who I was talking to yesterday, where I met a wolf. I'll talk about that later. It's like, yeah, you ever see one of those medieval weapons? He was describing a mace. It's a ball with all the spikes on it. Uh-huh. It's like, yeah, that's what those look like under microscopes. That's what uric acid looks like under a microscope. Yeah, it's super cool and kind of just hangs out and... If it was a broken toe, I'd be like, oh, cool, give me a cast and we'll fix it. But this is just like, nah, maybe it hangs out for till whenever.
And your flare-ups, are they can you accurately like pinpoint them to when you eat poorly?
No.
It just comes randomly?
No. I've been living how I wanted to live for a year, haven't had a flare-up. Then we're on the road for a week in the Northwest, and I come back, and it felt like somebody snuck in and smashed my foot with a hammer in the middle of the night.
Man.
So I got a real cool attitude right now, Dave.
Well,
real cool tude.
Sorry to hear that, buddy.
Yeah.
You old broken man.
Fucking fuck this shit. Stupid. Like, give me something cool, man.
Yeah.
Give me a real fucking thing.
What would you prefer?
I don't know, man.
What would be a... Yeah, I see.
I'm bitching because I'm in the middle of it, but uh-huh. I honestly, if I got to get something, this is probably a pretty easy thing. It's painful, but it's temporary. And it's a stupid, puts me, I'm a big baby, so I don't even like, I'm like, it's not even like, if I have to use a cane, it's not even like, oh, cool, oh, I got in a motorcycle accident.
Yeah.
Like, that's a cool reason to have a cane.
Or at least something you can put a cast on.
Yeah.
That's a conversation starter.
Yeah, boy, I live, boy, I did cool stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Nope. But I saw a wolf, Rachel's aunt has a wolf. I don't know how many... parts wolf it is, but it seems like a lot part wolf.
You sent me that picture. It was huge.
It was a giant beast.
It was like it weighed over 150 pounds.
Yeah, I think she said it was like 140.
Man.
140, giant head, super chill.
Yeah?
So just like a little dog, just laying around, just clumping around the house.
Are you allowed to have wolves?
Drinking out of the toilet. I mean, I guess. She had to go through a whole thing. Do it.
Wolves.
That's in my head. That was, I was thinking that the whole time.
Uh-huh.
But it was just a big dumb dog walking around the house.
Yeah.
It was really, yeah, I was petting, I was hanging out with Wolf. It was pretty cool.
There's a comic out of Denver. You know, I forgot his name. Jim somebody. He's got a wolf. And last time I was at a Good Heroin show here in LA, he's just hanging out with his wolf dog.
Yeah.
Just a man killer. Just a beast.
Yeah, this thing. If it did want to, oh, you'd be dead. But it really didn't seem like it had any. It had zero urge. Like, I think it's like its wolf instincts were definitely, there was something else, and it reminded me, like, yeah, man, you just have to be running through the woods chasing down food. Here, this lady just gives it to you.
Yeah.
Like, why? Like, you got it good. I think that's where survival kicked in for that wolf, is like, you made it.
Mm-hmm.
Dig it. So... Yeah. Yeah, that was it. I don't know, man.
Yeah.
I don't know. I got a salty tude.
Yeah.
And that's what's going on with me. So.
Salty tude Kinane.
Mm-hmm. What about you? What's going on?
Oh,
what
man.
What did you do this weekend? What happened?
Dude, I gotta talk about something.
You sure do.
I think I got fleas.
Dave. Why?
Because I've been itching a lot. And, well, all right, the other day, what the hell?
Oh, I might. Oh yeah. Now I guess there's a dog in my building.
Oh, wow. He's pissed.
Which is just great.
Yeah. Do you know what kind of dog it is?
It's not a fucking wolf.
I don't know if that picked up on the audio to the listener, but there's a what sounds like a small dog throwing a shit fit.
Yeah.
Man, the other night, Friday night, I'm sitting at home with the lady, and she's got two cats, and they're rad as hell. Mm-hmm. Shout out to Harvey and Truman. Hi, Dave. Anyway, but they're indoor cats. They never go outside.
Yeah.
And she keeps them nice and clean. And I never see them sitting around like itching and scratching and stuff. And the other night, I'm just...
But they see you sitting around.
I'm just... I got shit. Like it was like gnats, but you couldn't see them. Like I couldn't see anything flying around. But like shit landed on my face, on my hands, on my arms. For all night, I'm still scratchy from it. And I'm like... My first thought was, oh, shit, okay, the cats have fleas. But while I'm doing this, the whole time they're just sitting in the living room just chill as hell. They're not scratching or anything. Katie's not scratching. I don't know how the hell I got fleas, but it stuck with me all night.
I mean, everybody listening knows how you may have gotten fleas. We all know how you live.
That's how I used to live.
You sure it's not bed bugs, right? Because if it's bed bugs, I'll set you on fire and kick you off the porch of my house right now.
Man, it's a miracle. Neither one of us have gotten bed bugs yet. As many hotels as we stay in.
That is knocking on wood right
yeah,
there.
Yeah, man. That scares the shit out of me. But no, I mean, and I don't know where it came from. I wasn't out. I mean, I went out for walks and stuff, but it's not like I'm rooting around in the dirt.
Your fucking van has fleas.
Yeah, it probably does. My van used to have ants. Had a big ant problem.
I had ants in my car too. I was like, God, really? I mean, I was almost like respected them. Like, mm-hmm. You made it up the tire. Like, oh, you crawled in there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all right.
I used to have so many ants that I just got used to them. You know, just like a third world villager who has flies. You know, just
yeah. You got used to a lot of stuff, you know? Dave. You should, don't get used to fleas, yeah. All right? Do something.
I don't know what's going on. I got to take a flea dip.
You could probably wear one of them collars like a bracelet. It might fit like a nice fashion accessory.
That'd be cool. Get a collar. Maybe take a dip.
You know, just like, yeah, I don't know.
But what could it be? If it's not gnats.
Did you bathe before you came over to my house?
I shower every day now. Yeah.
Now.
Sometimes twice a day.
You know what? I'd mock that, but yeah. I'd take a day off.
Yeah. No, now that I don't have to, you know, now that it's not a gauntlet of old flabby Russian dudes that I got to get through, and
it's a lot of old swinging dicks.
Oh man, a lot of old. That's one thing I don't miss is all the old balls.
You don't miss old balls?
Oh my god, it was part of my daily life. Just balls as far as the eye could see.
They drop far, man.
Yeah. Oh my god.
Right.
Yeah. Long balls. You got long balls, Larry. You got long ass balls.
Long balls.
That's a Curb reference. But yeah, man. So I had fleas Friday night, and I still made
real tortoise in the hair situation down there. Whole life hoping for a big crank, and then eventually puberty, you're like, there it is. And then a few years later, your balls are like, get out of the way, dick. I'm coming. Come race. Race to the bottom.
Step aside, dude.
Yeah.
Excuse me. Man with big balls coming through. And then Saturday, went to a swap meet. And I never really knew the difference between a swap meet and a flea market. Coming from the South, we had flea markets. And I never even
you
heard of
them. You don't want to make the tie-in right there?
Yeah. Never. Oh, look out. There we go.
You're itching. This weekend you went to a literal flea market?
I had the fleas before I went to the flea market. But, man, that could have been something there. But never even knew what a swap meet was until listening to, like, the Dr. Dre album in the – in the early 90s, a lot of those interludes talked about the Slauson swap meet, mm-hmm. And I didn't know what that was until later. I was like, oh, okay, it's like a flea market. And in the South, flea markets, I'm not saying flea markets are good down there, but there's a lot of bullshit, but there's also an element of like, oh, grandpa's treasure chest, you know, like
people with crafts.
Yeah, a lot of arts and crafts, a lot of leather goods, you know, belts and whatnot, and
yeah,
baseball cards and knickknacks and what do you call that? What's the word for like knickknacks?
Garbage.
damn it. Not haberdashery.
Tchotchkes?
No. God damn it. Now it's going to drive me. Anyway, it'll take forever for me to figure that out.
What's the origin? What language? What nationality of origin? Nation of origin?
Like, you know what I'm talking about? Like, it's kind of like knick-knack. It's,
Paddywhack?
Ah, damn it. Regardless.
Are you giving dogs a bone?
There's a lot of that shit.
So you got
that's
these.
What I associated flea markets with was, and, you know, and occasionally you'll have, like, the guy selling.
Give me the dog a bone!
The guy selling, like, socks and toilet paper.
Yeah.
But this swap meet was just nothing but, like, black market laundry detergent. And
yeah,
toothpaste and socks.
It's a sorted out landfill.
Tools. Yeah, it was. And we went late in the day when everybody was kind of breaking down. And
when
it was,
good stuff was gone.
It was just depressing, man. Just row after row. And just a weird hodgepodge of, you know, hey, you need a socket set or a framed picture of Jessica Alba. You know, make me an offer. And just, it was a bummer.
Yeah, I can't. The amount of stuff I might find at one of those things versus the driving out to it. And I'm like, man, there's not going to be a treasure there. There's not going to be like, boy, I'm sure glad I got up at 5 a.m. on this Saturday to drive 25 miles out into the burbs.
Yeah.
What were you just going to go? I mean, I can't believe somebody has an actual shopping list for a swap meet.
Yeah, just going to go. I did pick up a few things. I got a nice cutting board. I got a new cutting board. Got a new pair of tongs and a Merle Haggard LP. So, yeah.
Oh, so you actually you scored.
Yeah, it was scored. I scored, man. And I always like to haggle.
Cutting board? Wood?
No, like a good, thick plastic one.
Okay.
I like the wood ones, but sometimes they warp, you know, when you get them
too wet.
I don't
think I'd trust a wood cutting board from a flea market that probably definitely has evidence.
I tried to buy a Louisville Slugger baseball bat from a guy, you know, just to have, and he wouldn't haggle. He wanted 20. I was like, you take 15? He goes, no, I used to ask 25. And I was like, all right.
Well, why don't you used to ask 20?
Yeah.
Take 15.
Yeah. And
used to means he's been sitting on that shit for 5 years waiting for that extra $5 to come around.
Yeah. So he wasn't in the mood to haggle. I did haggle. The
who sells shit at a swap meet that isn't the mood to haggle?
Yeah, didn't want to haggle. Didn't want to budge. You know, at least make a counter, you know, like counter.
No dice.
When you're asking 20, I say, hey, 15. You go, 17. You know, but he was just like, no, I used to ask 25. I was like, all right, well, see you later. Okay. And but I did get a good deal on the tongs and the cutting board. I got both of those. I think sticker price combined was about 14. I gave him 10, and he was like – He mumbled something. Yeah. So, yeah, it was a good day. It was a good day over the old swap meet. But, man, I just feel bad for those folks. Like, just a parade of, like, the shittiest vans. You know, they're loading it up. Just vans full of monkey wrenches and weed eater parts. And
swap meet.
Yeah, it was a bummer. And then they had a couple of food trucks. And one guy just selling hot dogs, and he had like the Tupperware dish full of relish and onions that looked like it had been sitting there for 3 days, had flies swarming all around it. Now, I don't know if I want to eat too much at a damn swap meet.
Swap meets, that's the fucking hospice care before the dump. That's all it is. It's like, you know, it's garbage.
Yeah.
It's not like you're just like giving it its last hurrah. Like, you know what? These placemats with cigarette burns in them, it's garbage. But let's just give them one last Saturday in the sunshine.
Ooh, bric-a-brac. That's what I was thinking of.
Bric-a-brac.
Is that a word?
Yeah, no,
bric-a-brac.
I know what you're talking about, yeah.
Am I using it right? Is that what I like to see?
No, yeah, bric-a-brac.
Bric-a-brac.
Just a little tchotchkes, little shits hanging around. Yeah.
Little trinkets. But yeah, there was just – it was all like either stolen goods – or old tools. There was no in between.
Fencing material.
It was just all tube socks. And then, like, all right, this one dude had a big old thing, a Listerine mouthwash, which I'm a big fan of. Brand loyalty. I've always been a Listerine guy. Got to keep that breath smelling good.
Sure.
And, but he had the big one. And I was like, hey, how much for that? And, like, in the store, that's about $6 or $7. And he's like, $6.50. I'm like, I could get that at CVS.
Where did he just have one bottle of
no,
it?
No, he had a bunch. Like, it was sealed. But, like, I would say I saw that. You know, you think of, like, buying – it seems weird to buy, like, soap and mouthwash and toothpaste at a swap meet. But then you're like, well, maybe I could get it super cheap, you know.
Still weird.
$7 thing, fucking mouthwash. You know, hey, $3, $2. Okay, score. But he's like $6.50. I'm like, that's the same.
Mysterine. It's Benverine. Okay. This isn't Listerine. This is Benverine.
Yeah.
Benverine's mouthwash. Original, the yellow, the Lysol.
I like the blue.
Everybody likes the blue. Nobody wants the original one.
I don't mind the original.
That tastes like toilet cleaner.
Yeah, it does. But like it makes me feel like it works better. Like it just destroys.
How much evidence do you think got moved around at a swap meet?
Oh, man, there's no telling.
You know somebody just like, oh, yeah, here's a super cool knife. Mm-hmm. No receipt. See you later.
And some guy was selling computer monitors that looked like they were just – they still had bits of broken glass in the keyboard. Like, this looked like it came right out of somebody's apartment.
Also, who still gets a computer monitor?
Yeah.
Think about – like, when you – like, think about the pallets of waste that we're creating.
Mm-hmm.
I think – you know what that is? My foot hurts, and it's gray and gloomy out, and then I just was listening to a podcast kind of spacing out in bed this morning about how everybody's like, oh, yeah, the Earth will be uninhabitable in at least – 200 years.
Probably sooner.
We need
than that.
To figure out, yeah, it's sooner than that. I just think about the amount of waste.
Because
it's just in my head, like, everybody got their Dell computer set up in the mid 2000s. Mm-hmm. And as soon as, like, a laptop, like, why the fuck did I have a tower and a monitor?
Yeah.
And there's just pallets of old Dell monitors shrink wrapped up, just sitting somewhere because they don't know how to dispose of any of it.
Yeah.
Just plastic. I'm fully on board with the don't give somebody a straw unless they ask for it. Mm-hmm. It's little things.
Mm-hmm.
Plastic
water
bottles.
I still buy like the big case of bottled water.
Man, get a refillable jug and a Brita.
Yeah, I got to do that. Yeah, yeah, a lot of waste.
Granted, I don't know what disease I'm giving myself using this plastic cup from Port-A-Call Bar and Grill in New Orleans that I've been drinking out of for 5 years. I'm sure I'm ingesting whatever. You know what? It'll give me the cancer and I'll die soon enough before I poison the world anymore. I'm in a great mood, Dave. I got a cool, great attitude.
Oh, man.
I have no right to be in a bad mood, but I am, so fuck it.
I watched a couple movies this week.
What'd you watch, Dave?
I watched one really good one and one really awful one.
Tell me both movies.
Which one you want to hear first?
Tell me both movies. I'll guess which one you like, which one you don't like.
The Gift. Right. Not The Gift with Cate Blanchett from like 2000. This is the newer one with Jason Bateman.
Yeah.
And then I also watched Beatrice at Dinner with Salma Hayek, who I've always been a
guess you liked The Gift and didn't like Beatrice at Dinner.
Correct.
Which, not knowing anything about Beatrice at Dinner, it's got Salma Hayek and the word dinner in it.
Uh-huh.
So I think, you know, but I'm thinking it's more of an artsy version of Beatrice at Dinner. Not like Salma Hayek just goes and talks about chicken wings.
Yeah, that would have been much better. Man, what a piece of shit. Just...
What's it about?
I came in about 10 minutes late into it, but I figured... John Lithgow's in it.
John Lithgow and what's his name from The Blacklist are the same dude now.
The Blacklist. What's The Blacklist?
With James Spader.
You think they're the same guy? John Lithgow's a lot older.
Yeah, but look at what happened. James Spader was like was like sexy bully all through the 80s. And
getting
now
that puffy
the
face.
Same, they're the same dude.
Okay, I could see
Look up James Spader, John Lithgow.
Speaking of John Lithgow, I watched another movie that I watched years ago. Not winning any Oscars, but a fun romp. Ricochet, John Lithgow and Denzel Washington. Denzel's
– No, but look at these fucking guys right here. Bang, 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 bang. Look at those dudes.
Yeah.
Same dude. Spader's young Lithgow now.
Lithgow looks like old Bubbles from Trailer Park Boys.
Old Bubbles.
Yeah. Love that character, Bubbles. Anyway.
Old Bubbles just as a phrase is very poetic.
Beatrice at dinner. Long story short.
What'd she eat?
Selma Hayek. What is she? She's a healer. She does massages and weird stone healing stuff. And she went over to this rich lady's house to service her, to give her a massage or something. Car won't start when she's ready to leave. They're like, all right, well, we're just about to have a big dinner party.
Oh.
Like this mansion. You hang out, have dinner with us, you know, whatever, until you can figure out your car situation. And then I think she somehow finds out that John Lithgow was a real estate mogul who shut down a factory or a hotel in her hometown of somewhere in Latin America. I'm not going to say, I don't know if it's Mexico or Guatemala or wherever, but obviously Selma Hayek, Latina, and she's playing that character, speaking with a thick accent. So somewhere in Central or South America. But she connected the dots that, you know, John Lithgow's a evil white rich guy who fucked up her hometown. And then she just spends the rest of the movie just lurking around this dinner party, making everybody uncomfortable and like just being real passive aggressive. And John Lithgow's just like, all right, sorry, whatever. I don't know. Just it went nowhere. And then in the end. She has a dream sequence where she stabs him and kills him. And I'm like, oh, okay, there's a payoff. And then you realize, oh, she's just daydreaming. But the final scene.
Dream's such a cheap move.
Yeah. The final scene, the tow truck driver finally comes and helps her out and hooks up the car and is driving her home. And then it's set and I obviously filmed out here in L.A. So she's driving down the coast somewhere like around Malibu or Santa Monica. And she goes, stop the truck, stop the truck. And then the guy's like, okay, whatever. And he stops the truck, and she just gets out and walks into the ocean. Roll credits. I don't know if it meant like she's killing herself, but she like walked deep into the ocean to where like the waves engulfed her. And she's like, all right, that's the end of the movie.
That's a turd
just
ending.
Fucking horrible piece
that is
of shit.
A turd ending.
She's like playing guitar. She's singing like acoustic folk protest songs to all these rich people while they're drinking their
it's written by Mike White
brandy but yeah, that was a stinker. But then the gift, Jason Bateman, some other guy I couldn't peg. He looks like
Connie Britton in that.
He looks like Bryan Cranston's stunt double.
That dude wrote and directed that movie, and I can't remember his name.
Who?
And he was also in Warrior.
You're talking about The Gift?
Yeah, I saw that in the theaters. Thought it was good. Thought it was a good one.
Yeah. So you saw The Gift. Okay.
Yeah.
Little slow at first, but like some – and I won't give any spoilers to this one, but good twists and turns. Just a couple of really good holy shits and solid movie.
Jason Bateman coming in later in life.
Yeah.
With the career turn after being in –
Arrested Development really turned it all around.
Yeah. But what was it? What was he a teen in?
Oh, Hogan's Family.
Is that which one it was?
Yeah.
Was it Justine Bateman in that one also?
I think. Was Justine Bateman in? She was in Family Ties.
We both have computers.
Yeah. But I believe I knew him. And who was the lead female in Hogan's Family? Valerie Bertinelli or Valerie somebody? But yeah, as a teen.
Hogan's Family.
But he always, you know, like I don't dislike him, but aside from Arrested Development where he's got some, you know, real good subtle comedic timing, most of his dramatic stuff and even other comedic stuff is pretty vanilla.
Ozark, man.
Yeah. Oh, I just started watching Ozark because of that movie. I was like, oh, I need to give Jason Bateman another try. And I started watching Ozark, watching the first episode of that, and holy shit, that was good. But yeah, man, The Gift. Not to be confused, like I said, the one with Cate Blanchett, 2000, Giovanni Ribisi, Cate Blanchett. That's a solid movie. That's a little voodoo in that one. Did you see that one?
I don't know that one.
But it was solid. But this one, completely unaffiliated with that one. Just happened to share the same name. But yeah, twists and turns galore. And holy shit, that final scene.
I forgot it already.
No spoilers.
But
we'll talk about it off the air. But yeah,
this has been Kyle and Dave Love Movies.
Both those
get
could
Doug
be,
Benson to talk about ghosts.
Both those can be found on Netflix, by the way.
Go on and check your local Netflix.
But yeah, other than swap meet and getting fleas, all I did was watch the movies this week. Got a great recipe at the end of the episode. I'll share that later.
Take it from old Fleabag.
Mm-hmm. Oh, also, and I'll quit ranting here in a minute. Boy, howdy.
what are you starting with, boy, howdy?
Went to Whole Foods in Glendale on on a Saturday at like 2 p.m.
Man, that's
prime. I would rather spend 6 months in a Turkish prison than spend 6 minutes in a fucking Whole Foods on the weekend here in L.A.
I don't do anything on a weekend.
Oh, my God.
I don't do shit on a weekend if it involves like capitalism. That's horrible. Not anti-capitalism, but I'm not going to go to a mall. I'm not going to do any of that shit.
It was awful. It was a living hell.
Yeah.
Just literally, I'm not exaggerating. Every step I took, I was in somebody's way or vice versa.
Yeah.
Like and I get the Trader Joe's thing because Trader Joe's is super small, but Whole Foods, normal size store, still just packed to the brim with yuppies looking at fucking avocados. And I couldn't move.
I'm going to blame you for this. I'm going to blame you for going to Whole Foods on a weekend.
Michael Douglas falling down moment where I was just, oh my God, I almost lost my shit.
Yeah.
And just people fucking everywhere.
Why did you go there on a weekend?
I cooked the thing. I wanted to cook, and we'll talk about that later. But anyway.
But you have the freedom. See, I feel bad for people that got to work all week.
Yeah.
And then the weekends are the only time to run around at the same time everybody else is. But then you got the freedom of a weekday, dude.
I know. I just woke up Saturday and wanted to cook this particular dish, so I had to go buy all the stuff. And like just kids everywhere and just get – oh, God.
Hey, dog.
I'm all right.
Take a breath.
We're both
– scratch it off, man.
I'm still a little itchy. I'm sorry that I brought that into your
home. There's shit in my house, Dave. I'm going to push your van into the fucking ocean. I'm going to Salma Hayek your fucking van. That's what I'll do.
Oh, God.
Well, this is the Boogie Monster with Kyle and Dave.
Yeah, I'm Dave. That's Kyle.
And what did we want to talk about today, Dave?
I don't know, man.
What do
you feel like talking about something?
Well, what will the listeners do if we don't fuck our way around a topic for 25 minutes?
Well, I got a topic. This is a topic I wanted to talk about. The last couple weeks during
following our theme from the Northwest.
Yeah, yeah. And we had so much fun on those live episodes. Mm-hmm. We didn't get to it, but I wanted to – and this isn't – this has been done. A lot of people have looked into this. Big story.
Yeah.
But I figured, what the hell? Let's get into some D.B. Cooper.
Yeah. He was a hockey player that had to learn how to figure skate.
Is that a reference to something? What's that movie?
Now I'm deep into it. Gleaming the Cube was Christian Slater.
Yeah.
And it was about skateboarding.
Uh-huh.
What was the ice skating? Now I'm looking it up. But you,
D.B. Cooper, for those of you who don't know, you probably know. But if you don't know. Cutting Edge.
With D.B. Sweeney.
D.B. Sweeney.
I knew I was making a thing that. I knew I was saying something that made sense.
D.B. Cooper is the dude. Or that's the name. First of all, everybody says that's the name he gave. He gave the name Dan Cooper after this incident that I'm about to describe happened. A few days later in the newspaper, there was a typo that referred to him as D.B. Cooper, and that handle just stuck because D.B. sounds a lot cooler than Dan. But Dan Cooper was the alias that this unknown man gave when he hijacked a fucking airplane November 24th, the day before Thanksgiving, 1971. This guy named he bought a one-way ticket from Portland to Seattle. That's a quick flight. That's like 30 minutes.
Sure.
Paid $20 cash, gave the name Dan Cooper, and hijacked it and demanded $200,000. Long story short, he got the 200 grand, and then he bolted. He parachuted out of a damn Boeing 727. Into the cold night of the Pacific Northwest.
What date was this?
Never
what
to be time seen. Of year? November 24th, 1971, day before Thanksgiving. And yeah, that's almost 50 years ago. To this day, nobody knows who. There's a lot of suspects, a lot of people, you know, hey, I think it was my uncle, or hey, I think it was my neighbor. We'll talk about that later. But yeah, never caught him. Don't even know if the guy, you know, a lot of speculation that he didn't survive the jump. But, yeah, so anyway, D.B. Cooper, and there's a couple of infamous sketches. I think the dude looks like – I think they should be talking to Jerry Lee Lewis because I think the sketch looks a lot like Jerry Lee Lewis. Pitching great Sandy Koufax. I hope that the FBI –
He looks like every dude from He looks like Frank Sinatra. He just looks like the guy. He looks like
guy
a,
from the 50s.
A regular guy.
Yeah, suave dude.
Yeah, he does not look like a...
I think he looks like Jerry Lee Lewis, minus the crazy hair. Anyway, so yeah, dude buys a plane ticket in Portland. $20 $20 cash for that one-way ticket. Gets on the plane. After the plane takes off, he's dressed real nice. He's got like a business suit, coat, tie, jacket, and all that shit. He's got they keep calling it an attaché case. What's the difference between an attaché case and a briefcase? Is there a difference? They serve a different purpose?
I don't know, man. Sometimes I think it's the one that maybe just opens on the top. Like a briefcase, you got to lay flat and open.
Oh, okay. Okay, gotcha. So he had his attaché case and sits down, sits towards the back of the plane, orders a bourbon and soda. They talk about how he's drinking a couple of these bourbon and sodas, smoked about 8 or 10 cigarettes, Raleigh cigarettes. I don't even know if they make those anymore.
Don't think so.
But a few minutes after they – is it – Ascend's going upwards, right? As opposed to descend.
Descend.
A few minutes after they ascended, he hands one of the stewardesses.
Like how you tried to use a big word and then still had to get it correct. You could have said take off a few minutes after they took off.
Oh, God. Not a smart man. He hands a flight attendant, stewardess. What's the correct thing now? You can't call them stewardesses anymore, right?
I think we go with flight attendant.
Flight attendant.
You want to just pause? We can go over all the language you're trying to use in this one?
Dave's good with words.
You just pitch the whole episode to me and I'll tell you which ones. Sorry.
That's all right.
I got that tuned, man.
That's okay. I bring it on myself. Hands a flight attendant a note. She immediately doesn't even look at it. She just puts it in her purse like, oh, another creep trying to give me his phone number. He notices that she doesn't read the note, and then he calls her back over. He goes, hey, ma'am, you might want to read that note. I have a bomb. And she's like, oh, shit. You might want to read that note. I have a bomb. And orders her to sit down next to him, and she asks to see the bomb, and he opens his attaché case. And sure enough, looks like a bomb. It's got 8 red cylinders, bunch of wires. Who knows if it was a legit bomb or not? But she's like, oh crap. All right. Well, we're going to listen to
it. It's pretty
easy
to make a fake-looking bomb.
Yeah, I would imagine.
If I see an alarm clock anywhere not near a bedside table, I'm like, oh, that's a bomb.
Speaking of which, let's sidetrack for a moment because I'll forget if we don't.
Sure.
I finished Evil Genius.
Yeah, watch that Evil Genius.
You finished it all?
Yeah, it's only 4 episodes.
So,
watch.
What do you think? Do you think dude was in on
it?
Did
we talk about it on another thing?
I mentioned that I was starting to watch it. I don't know if we gave any.
Watch it. It's about the guy who had a bomb strapped to his neck for in Erie, Pennsylvania, about 10 years ago.
Yeah, 2003.
Okay, about 15 years ago. They put a bomb in this guy's neck, made him rob a bank. And Evil Genius, you will hear the whole story unfold about who was involved with the crime and whether or not the guy with the bomb strapped around his neck was involved with it or unwittingly. Like how much did he know? I think he was just a slow fella.
Well, there's one of 3 scenarios that probably that took place. Either one, he didn't know the crooks at all, and they just ordered a pizza, and they were like, whoever brings this pizza, this is going to be our pawn.
But they proved that he knew him.
Do they prove that? They said that somebody saw him pulling out of that one guy's driveway the day
before.
Yeah,
but that he was also seeing prostitutes at the guy's house who was a fishing buddy of the mastermind lady.
Right, okay. Well, there goes the first option. So, yeah. So, second one, he was a willing...
We're ruining it. Spoiler alert if we got to tell people that kind of thing.
But, yeah, the big mystery is, was he in on it or not?
Yeah, it's not a spoiler when it was a true crime story that has already unfolded and the information's out
there. Yeah. I think he was in on it, but didn't... And they probably told him, and he probably believed, oh, yeah, don't worry about it. This looks like a bomb, but it's not a real bomb. And then when he's out there in handcuffs on the ground and then starts to hear it tick, then he's like, oh, shit.
Yeah, I think they probably told him. He seemed like a slow fella, and they told him that it was fake.
Yeah, poor bastard, man. And then they show it that first time. Just real quick, but enough to where you're like, god damn.
Yeah.
But, yeah, good series. evil genius. But anyway, so I wanted to get your thoughts on that. But anyway, so dude has a bomb on the plane, and he says he wants $200,000, and he specifically asked for $20 bills. He wanted 10,000 $20 bills. Now, if I'm jumping out of a damn, if I know that I'm going to parachute with my loot, why not get $100 bills? It would literally be five times lighter.
It's harder to spend $100 bills.
Oh, okay.
It's easier to track them. There's less $100 bills in the world than there are 20s.
There you go. There you go, Kyle. Good one. I was just thinking of like the difficulty of like, man, I think they – whatever that weighed, I think they said it weighed like 23 pounds. So he's yeah, jumping out of an airplane with an extra 23 pounds. So anyway, he wrote a letter.
I understand why people don't counterfeit $5 bills.
Hmm. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, who's tracking those?
Everybody's trying to go big time with counterfeiting. Counterfeit small amounts so you're never detected and just keep the operation going for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And just try to live. Hey, criminals, try to live within your means.
Yeah. $5 at a time.
Live sensibly, criminal masterminds.
I always get slightly offended when I try to spend 100 and then they hold it up. And I'm like, well,
they just got it.
If it's not real, it's not my fault because that's what somebody gave me. Anyway, he gives her another letter with his demands. He wanted $200,000 in $20 bills and four parachutes. And he wanted to land, when they landed in Seattle at SeaTac Airport, he wanted a fuel truck standing by to refuel up because it's unclear. I think he said he wanted to go to Mexico or maybe Reno. Ultimately, the plane went to Reno. So anyway, he's on the plane from Portland to Seattle. Tells the stewardess, hey, I got a bomb. Here's a note of my demands. She relays all this information to the pilot and the flight engineer. They start relaying it to the tower, and they land in Seattle. And they give the excuse that everybody has to stay on for an extra time because, I don't know, there was some mechanical issue. He agrees to let all, I think it was like 36 or 39 passengers go. Yeah. Five people stay on the plane, including him, two stewardesses, two flight attendants, rather, and two of the pilots. So everybody gets off except him and the four employees. It takes several hours for the police department to get all their shit together. I think the commissioner of the SeaTac Airport was the one that approved the $200,000. They somehow, from multiple banks, they gather up the $200,000, somehow get it to him on the plane. They refuel. They take back off. So now it's just him.
Yes, for four parachutes.
Four parachutes, and two backups. I don't know. I don't know all the details with the parachutes. However, later during the investigation, they thought initially they thought, well, this guy, if he's got the balls to jump out of a commercial airplane, he's probably got a military background, maybe a paratrooper in the Army. But they thought that, you know, on first note, you would think that. But then they said, upon further reflection, they were like, well, he used the two shittiest parachutes. He didn't use the really good ones, meaning like he probably – they think he didn't know which ones were the – he didn't know anything about them enough.
Why would you trust – hey, I'm robbing you. Also, make sure you give me a way to get away.
Well, if you got a bomb, you do whatever I say or else, you know, I'm going to blow myself and everybody else.
Here's a parachute with the shit that doesn't work in the parachute. There you go. Jump off the plane.
Oh, you mean give him a shitty one? Yeah. Or give him a defective one?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, yeah, I don't know. Maybe
he's going to unfold a whole parachute on inside an airplane to check it?
That's a good point.
Everybody involved in this is dumb.
So they take off again. They take off. Now they're
backpack
heading south.
Full of dildos. There you go. Good luck, fuckface.
And they had a couple fighter jets.
That's our AdamandEve.com spot, by the way. You get a backpack full of dildos. It's 50% off.
Oh, my God.
It's back to school savings. They start those early. They start those sales early now. Anyway, so what happened? Sorry.
So
he got
let's see. Where am I at in my notes?
He got his parachutes, and he used two shitty parachutes.
He jumped out somewhere around, they think around the Washington-Oregon border, many miles east of, like, Portland. So that's where they think. Of course, when they figured out, they were able to detect like the exact route that the plane took, and then based on cabin pressure, when he opened that hatch door, there was a change in pressure.
Yeah.
So they figured out the change of pressure would have probably been the exact time when he jumped. Based on the location and the time, the problem with catching him after the fact was the zone that he could have landed in was 28 square miles. So that's a big area to like boots on the ground.
What altitude did he jump out of?
I can't remember the exact. He wanted to fly extremely low. I want to say it was like 10,000 feet, whereas like normally.
Like out of parachuting.
Yeah, normally those planes fly at what, around 30,000 feet?
Yeah.
So he wanted it to go super low and super slow. He made them slow down to 200 miles an hour. That's why these fighter jets that were tailing him, they couldn't fly slow enough. So they had to keep doing like these giant, go way ahead
and do these
circles and circle back. So anyway, so they said the dude, the flight attendant said that he was super polite. Super chill, wasn't nervous, even paid for his drinks. That's weird that you're going to hijack a plane and get $200,000, but he paid for his two bourbons and sodas.
He's a classy criminal. He's one of them sophisticated.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a heist.
And
when it's a heist, you tip. When it's a robbery, you're a dick. But when it's a heist, you're like, oh, I got to put on a suit.
That's the difference. I like that. The flight attendant said that while they were up there, before they were about to land the first time there in Seattle, that he made comments like, oh, it looks like Tacoma down there. So they think that he was very familiar with they think he had some sort of military or aeronautics background in the sense that he could identify the terrain from the ground. But like you know you're going from Portland to Seattle, like
enough. I could pick out Burbank, I could pick out Sherman Oaks.
Yeah. Oh, it looks like Tacoma. Oh, you mean the city just south of Seattle? Yeah. It does look like that. But he also said that he mentioned that McCord Air Force Base was close by, so maybe he had some sort of knowledge, you know, some inside knowledge of Air Force bases and able to identify and locate
them. So this guy who just kept giving clues off in the plane and then magically jumped out with $200,000. I think the crew took it.
Oh, really?
I didn't read up on it. I'm just speculating. I think they made up a fucking fancy fun criminal, and then they hid the money in the airplane.
Fancy fun criminal.
And then all split it. Four people left on the plane. Split it 50. Split it four ways. $50,000 each.
It's interesting. Let's see. It's 7:40 is when they took back off from Seattle in the Boeing 727. Five people total on board. Two F-106 fighter aircraft scrambled from McCord Air Force Base. And like I said, they couldn't fly slow enough to keep up. What's the opposite of keep up? Yeah, I guess it works both ways. Keep up with this plane. So they had to keep making these huge circles, kind of doubling back. After takeoff, DB or Dan, he ordered the flight attendants and everybody to go into the cockpit and lock the door. So now he's alone in the cabin in this giant plane, and that's when he begins to put on his whatchamacallums. Just had a brain fart. Parachutes. Put on his parachutes, and he straps. He somehow weaves a rope or belt around, somehow securing the bag of loot. And then they think at approximately 8:13, the aircraft's tail section sustained a sudden upward movement, significant enough to require trimming back on the plane to level it out. And at 10:15, it landed. That plane landed in Reno Airport, and nobody was for sure that that nobody saw him because everybody was in the cockpit. The four other staff members, so they weren't. They figured, okay, that air pressure, that change in pressure, maybe, and they knew that door, that latch, that rear latch opened. So they assumed maybe he jumped out, but they weren't certain. So when they land at 10:15 at Reno, FBI agents, state troopers, deputies, Reno police, everybody surrounded the jet, and big standoff until eventually they're like, oh shit, he's not in here. So
wait, he forced them to stay inside the cockpit?
Mm-hmm.
Or they would know that, I'm just kind of trying to come up with my own theory. Or they would know that the change of air pressure would be bad, so they just all stayed up there while somebody kicked open the back door.
Yeah.
Or he kicked open the back door, and then he had no oxygen. They didn't have anything like that. So at 10,000 feet, I don't know if you could still just breathe easy. I mean, if you can jump from that high, you know, those – let me see what skydiving height is.
I would think he would make them all go up there so they wouldn't know exactly what time he jumped. Because if you knew if you could pinpoint the moment he jumped.
Standard jump altitude is 12,000 feet. So that means at 10,000 feet, you could be up there breathing all right. Those skydiving planes, the door's open all the time.
Yeah.
He could have just opened it and then just chilled out in there until it got right by Reno. It doesn't mean he jumped out when the door opened up. If he forced him in there.
Well, yeah, that's probably why he did that, so they wouldn't know. Because I feel like if you knew exactly when and where he jumped, then you could figure out kind of a zone.
So you have no
zone.
Idea from where – I think the crew took it, man. The crew concocted all this shit.
Oh, man, that's funny because that's – I've not – there's a lot of theories.
Why would he ask for four parachutes?
I don't know.
I'm looking up my theory right now. You got more facts?
I got a few facts here. Let's see. As far as the investigation, the FBI agents recovered 66 unidentified latent fingerprints aboard the airliner. He kept the note, by the way. That was the first thing they asked for. Hey, where's that note? And after he gave the note to the flight attendant, he took it back, which is smart. Agents also found his black clip-on tie. He had a clip-on tie, not a real tie. Yeah. And he left two of the four parachutes, so he only took two of the parachutes. I guess one primary and one backup. One of the ones he left had been opened, two shroud lines cut from its canopy. They interviewed some witnesses in Portland, Seattle, and Reno, all of those who personally interacted with Cooper that day, and a series of composite sketches was developed. And those are pretty infamous now. Those have kind of been everywhere. There's one sketch. When he initially talked to the flight attendant and gave her the note, he was not wearing sunglasses, so she got she gave a description of him without. And then when she came back after telling the pilot what's up, he had donned some sunglasses. So, yeah, man. Weird shit. Let's see.
Now, man, I think the fucking crew.
You think so?
Absolutely. I think they took – why would you ask for four parachutes? There's four people left on board. Nobody knows. Okay. So the only person that saw him was the
steward.
Flight attendant.
Yeah, the flight attendant. Yeah.
That's the only person who saw him.
And I think maybe some other passengers who had been released.
But none of the passengers know what was going on because they were all just released. Of like, oh, the flight screwed up, right? Is that what's happened? They didn't know it was a thing anyway, so they weren't paying attention to the guy. So they don't know if they saw a guy or not when they got off the plane.
True, true.
That's not. I can't believe that's not a theory, that the pilot and the two flight attendants didn't put this together themselves.
Well, I mean, they were obviously – everybody on board was obviously interviewed ad nauseum, I'm sure. Like, oh, the money's not here, so like – the money came on the plane, but it didn't come off with them. So, like,
of course not. It was just stashed on the plane. And they're like, oh, there's this story, and the guy jumped out. We got to look for him.
And they went back and retrieved it.
Here's my stuff that I travel with. Look at all the stories about how flight attendants got to just were drug dealers. All the stories. I mean, the one from Blow and that's how they said. But, you know, but the fact that nobody checked that shit.
Well, I'm sure they checked. Don't you think?
Are you sure?
Well, I'm not sure. I would assume. I would assume they would check everybody's luggage.
I'm not.
I mean, that's a shitty job by the FBI if they just.
Okay,
y'all go ahead and grab your own bags and get out of here.
No, I think this is. That's my angle. That's what I think.
Really?
Without any research on my own part and whatsoever. That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
I think they came up with a great story. Nobody else could have seen this guy. You know?
Well, we'll talk about suspects here later. Maybe this might have to be a two-parter. There's a whole laundry list of suspects.
He used cash to buy a one-way ticket, which means you got no credit card to worry about.
Mm-hmm. I guess back then you didn't have to present an ID. Unless he had a fake ID, Dan Cooper. Anyway, as far as the money, a month after the hijacking, FBI distributed a bunch of lists of the ransom serial numbers to financial institutions, casinos, racetracks, other businesses that routinely conducted significant cash transactions. And by the way, this is Northwest Orient Airline. They offered a reward of 15% of the recovered money, up to a maximum of $25,000. In early 72, U.S. Attorney General John Mitchell, he released the serial numbers to the general public. In 72, two men used counterfeit $20 bills printed with Cooper's serial numbers to swindle $30,000 from a Newsweek reporter named Carl Fleming in exchange for an interview with a man they falsely claimed was a hijacker. So somebody, they released these serial numbers, and then people are automatically starting to counterfeit them in an effort to.
No way. That's crew did it.
Now, in 1980, about, what, 9 years later, they right there on the shores of the Columbia River, about 5 miles north of Portland, some kid and his dad were horse playing around, having a little picnic, a little father and son, good time. And kid finds three bundles of decrepit, old, mildewy, three bundles of $20 bills, over $5,000 that this kid found. And they turned those into the FBI, and sure enough, those serial numbers matched. So that created a whole new problem as far as the investigation, because where they found this money, like I said, 5 miles north of Portland, right there on the banks of the Columbia, that was way off of where they thought the targeted jump zone was. This is just way off of their route, and they're like, "Well, shit! How did this money?"
Crew chucked it out.
You think so?
For bait, yeah.
Other theories are that DB returned and purposely buried some of that money just to kind of throw off the scent of the investigation.
Yeah.
So.
No, I got my. We'll go over the suspects in part two, but I got mine. I know what I did.
Yeah.
I know. I solved it.
What do you got?
I solved it. It's a crew.
You gotta tell us now.
Why didn't they investigate the crew?
I mean, I'm not sure, but you would think that. I mean, like with any bank robbery, they investigate all the employees just to make sure it's not an inside job. That just seems like a logical first step. Let's interview everybody who witnessed it and everybody who was on scene just to make sure they're not a part of it. You don't think that they went over those flight attendants and pilots with a fine-tooth comb? So what you're saying is they would have gotten that $200,000, stashed it somewhere on the airplane, and then once the FBI left, they just mosey on, double back?
The flight attendant that was the go-between left her job a decade after the Cooper caper, according to the Daily News.
Cooper caper.
Yeah. According to New York Daily News. And went into a convent in Oregon. So that's what you do when you're guilty. Yep.
I just don't know how they would retrieve the money. How they would get out.
We got a whole airplane, and all they're doing is looking for a guy that jumped out of the airplane already with money.
So based on your theory, DB was in on it too, though. Like,
there's no DB Cooper.
Oh, there never was.
There's no DB Cooper at all.
Gotcha. Okay.
This whole flight thing, like, all right, listen, we land, we tell him that there's a guy on board with a bomb. He wants it's this much money. Nobody else saw the guy other than the pilots and the crew, the two flight attendants.
Okay.
Nobody on the plane's going to know. They're not even paying attention. Oh, yeah. Sorry, mechanical problem. We all got to get off. Nobody's going to remember a guy, you know?
Yeah.
If there was no scene. Cool, we take back off. We got the money. Throw some of the. Why would you ask for four parachutes? Why would you even trust a parachute? Like, I'm robbing you. Give me a parachute. Again, they open the door, throw out some of the money, and then stash the rest of it anywhere they want on an airplane. You know?
Well, one thing I didn't quite understand.
Do they fly the same planes, the same flight patterns back and forth? They recover the money later?
One thing I didn't understand when I was researching this is they landed. They took off from Portland. They were supposed to land in Seattle. They did land in Seattle. Yeah. But then they told everybody something mechanical, like, we're at our destination. Just let everybody get off the plane. I don't know why they – unless, like, they had to taxi for a long time, and then they made up an excuse for that.
Yeah.
But, like, it's not like they had to make an emergency landing or, you know, oh, this isn't our final destination, but we got to land and get off here. It's like, no, this is where we were all going. Unless there was, like, a connection. Like, oh – because that happens sometimes. Like, in connecting flights, all right, just people – you know, when they – it's the same plane.
They closed the case on July 12th, 2016.
Mm-hmm. Been a lot of just so many suspects. A lot recently, just the other day, and we'll get into this next episode. But every couple of years, somebody comes out saying that he was my uncle, and most of the time it's because they wrote a book about it, and they want to get some attention for their book. But we'll dig deeper into your theory next week. That
now theory when you're right, it's a fact.
So, yeah.
It's me, Kyle Kinane, smarter than the FBI. I got a cane already. I'm like House, but a detective instead of a doctor.
Ooh, we should make that turn your cane into a cane gun like Evil Genius did.
The most obvious giant triggered shotgun he walked into a bank with. Anyway.
Oh, boy.
All right.
Well. All right. Well, we'll get into the suspects next week. It's a long, rambling list, but yeah. Almost 50 years later, they still don't have any hard proof of who it could be, or even if he's alive.
This is why the lady that became a nun afterwards, she knows.
Yeah, probably talk to her.
Yeah, she got absolved by Jesus, and now she doesn't have to tell the cops because she got forgiven by Jesus. That's what I think. They only found one lady. They didn't talk to the pilots. They didn't talk to any other people. All right, sure. Oh, what do you got? You got a
recipe, dude.
What you got?
Dude, I made some I've talked about this before. One of my favorite foods in the world, my favorite types of cuisine, Indian food.
Mm-hmm.
I've been eating Indian food since before I was born. And no, not really. I think that's why I love it so much. I didn't get into it till late in life. Growing up in north rural Georgia, wasn't a lot of Indian food around. But when I started traveling as a comedian, going all over the country, I get exposed to all kind of new stuff.
A reliable dish.
Yeah, and I've been eating – just big fan. But I've never cooked it. Never cooked any Indian food. So I found a recipe for butter chicken. You ever had that butter chicken? Like, I'm sold from the name.
Is that just not like tikka masala?
It's very similar to chicken tikka masala. I don't know what the difference is. I'm sure it's a little bit different spice blend or whatever. Usually butter chicken is more of a – kind of a yellow, light orange color, where the chicken tikka masala is more of a hearty red. Anyway, just a real basic dish. Full disclosure, I got to give a shout out to Maddie Matheson. I found his recipe and tweaked it. I watched one of his videos. I like that dude. A lot of that Viceland stuff. A lot of those guys are just too cool for school.
Oh, is he like a...
he's on Viceland. He's a Canadian dude. I think he's a former punk rock dude.
Oh, is he like a screw up with face tattoos?
Yeah, he's finally
found his home in the kitchen.
Got the neck tats. Got the knuckle tats. But like Action Bronson, just too cool. He's so chill and fresh. He can barely stand up. Same thing for Eddie Wong. But Matty Matheson just seems like a little more of a
excitable guy.
Yeah. But anyway, he's got a great recipe here. So I'm full disclosure, based on his, but I tweaked it just a little bit. So here's what we got for some good butter chicken. It sounds like a complex recipe, but it's
everything
really not.
Butter chicken. Come on.
All right, here's the ingredients list. Six tablespoons of olive oil.
Grow up, dude.
I use 10 garlic cloves. He called for 5. I used 10.
Two
red
fists of garlic.
Two red chilies. Two medium yellow onions. Three chunks of ginger about the size of your thumb. He called for ghee. I don't have any fucking ghee, which is clarified butter.
Karate outfit.
Just used a little more olive oil. In addition to that, 6 tablespoons of olive oil, get you about another quarter cup. Set that aside. 3 tablespoons of tomato paste, 3 tablespoons of turmeric. Is it turmeric or turmeric?
Ah, that one's okay.
I never could figure that one out. 2 tablespoons of chili powder, 2 tablespoons of, I'm going to mispronounce this, garam masala. It's an Indian spice. Two tablespoons. You looked at me funny like I said.
You're looking at me to help you out, that man. I get the regular English shit, but don't come at me with food stuff.
2 tablespoons of ground coriander, 2 tablespoons of ground cumin. You're going to need about 3.5 cups of tomato puree or just regular tomato sauce, not spaghetti sauce, but you can buy just straight up in a can tomato sauce that doesn't have a
tomato, right?
Tomato. Not necessarily spaghetti. Spaghetti sauce will work in a pinch.
Little spaghetti.
But just tomato sauce. He called for a tablespoon of dried fenugreek leaves. Don't know what the hell that was. Couldn't even find that in the store. And he used chicken breast, Maddie. That's where I'm disappointed. You should know, guy like you with your skills should know that chicken thighs is the way to go. I used chicken thighs.
You did not hold to this recipe.
Yeah. No, I mean, whatsoever. I used it as a base, but that's why I got to give him credit. I'm not trying to bite his shit and claim it as my own.
You remixed it.
I remixed it, but his is a base. But I used 2 pounds of boneless, skinless chicken breast. You need 2 cups of heavy cream, and then finally 8 tablespoons. That's a whole stick of unsalted butter. And then some fresh cilantro for garnish and jasmine rice to serve it with. So here's what you do. Pretty simple as far as the steps. First thing, get you a blender. I love this. This is how I make – I do my chili and my gumbo where I start with a puree. In that blender, put your 6 tablespoons of olive oil, your 10 cloves of garlic, those 2 red chilies, the onion, and the ginger. Throw all that in the blender.
What's the difference between a food processor and a blender?
I don't know. That's a good question. Okay. I think maybe a food processor has a lot more different settings where you could pulse and chop and grate and blah.
I just
grind that shit up, man. Right. Puree the shit of it.
Okay, sorry.
Olive oil, garlic, chilies, onion, and ginger all in the blender. Blend that shit up real good. In a big Dutch oven or a large pot, throw in that other, about a quarter cup of olive oil. If you got some ghee, you can use some ghee. I don't know. I don't want to mess with that. Get that going about medium heat for a couple minutes. Get that olive oil hot. Then throw in your puree mixture and kind of stir that around for about 10 minutes till it kind of gets soft and starts to turn color just a little bit. Then you're going to add your tomato paste and all those spices and stir that around for about 5 more minutes till it's dark and sticky. Then you want to add about 1.5 cups of water. I didn't use water. I used beer. So I put 1.5 cups of Coors Original in there and stir that shit around, scrape the bottom of the pan for
just
any bits.
Like the Indians, too. Yeah.
Then you stir in the tomato puree and turn it up to high heat. Bring that shit to a boil. As soon as it gets to a boil, bring it back down to a simmer and cover it and cook that for about 1 hour, stirring it occasionally. After about 1 hour, all that shit should be right where you need it to be. Final step is to take those chicken thighs, chop them up however you want them. I like little cubes or strips, but chop those chicken thighs in, throw that shit in there, cook it for about 15 minutes, and then the final step, add the cream and the butter. So you're going to take that 2 cups of cream and that whole stick of butter, and you're going to throw that shit in there and stir it all up, and that's going to take it from like a red to a nice orangey yellow, and then a little salt in there at the end, and then serve it over rice, and if you want, chop up some cilantro to garnish that shit, and boom, butter chicken. I've been eating that shit, seriously, 5 meals in a row. I made way too much. I don't like to waste food. I put it on some eggs this morning. Made some scrambled eggs and put some of that. And I brought some for you. And boy,
got that sauce.
That shit's good. Throw it on some veggies, whatever you want. Yeah. And by the way, if you're doing vegetarian, this wouldn't be vegan because of the butter and the cream. But if you want to go vegetarian, substitute that chicken for whatever veggies you want. Just get you a bag of those frozen microwavable broccoli, cauliflower, carrots, whatever. And instead of chicken, just throw some veggies in there. Boom, you get your vegetarian.
That's my party right now.
Butter veggies instead of butter chicken.
Everything butter veggies, man.
Everything butter chicken.
Nick Vatterott has that joke. Oh, I'm dating a real butter dick. That's it. It's one sentence, and it's a perfect joke.
Oh, that's great.
All right.
You got anything to plug there, buddy? Plug some shit, dude.
When does this come out?
Plug it up. This is coming out on the 29th.
Oh, tomorrow night I'll be in Omaha, Nebraska at the Waiting Room. And Thursday I'll be in Des Moines, Iowa at Vaudeville Muse. And then that weekend I'll be at the Turnbuckle Festival in Maquoketa, Iowa at a barn called Codfish Hollow.
Oh, that sounds fun.
That's a real place.
I got some dates coming up. I'll be out most of June. I'll run through a few of the dates. 8th and 9th of June, I'll be in Lowell, Arkansas, because I play all the big rooms. Playing the Grove Comedy Club.
8th and 9th.
8th and 9th. 15th and 16th, I'll be in Springfield, Missouri at the Blue Room Comedy Club. 17th, St. Louis at the Southtown Pub. 19th, Milwaukee at the Underground Collaborative. And the 20th, I'm in Chicago at North Bar.
Yeah, buddy.
More dates later, but dumbdavestone.com's got all those dates. I'm also going to Cincinnati, Pittsburgh, Columbus, Cleveland, Wilmington. Won't bore you with all those now. We'll save that for next week.
You're in the world.
Out wandering around, dude. Well, man, I hope you feel better. And I hope you change that, too.
Thanks.
Got to turn that frown upside down.
I'm getting through it.
You just hang in there, buddy.
Yeah, all right.
All right. Holler at your boys.
All right, bye.
The Boogie Monster.